Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scows West.
West.
Issue 1.5. The 0.5 issue where we review our comics, and we have plenty of comics to go through. So we're just going to kick it right off because we don't even have time for this. So let's go to Nat.
All right. So I'm going to lead off with Extremity number 3. Extremity is a new title out of Image's Skybound line. It is written, illustrated, inked by Daniel Warren Johnson with colors by Mike Spicer. This has been my favorite book for the past 3 months since its release. There's a lot of world building in this. There's a Miyazaki influence. The way Daniel Warren Johnson pencils is very akin to manga in terms of like use of speed lines and spacing and establishing shots. This is amazing. This is such an outstanding debut, in quotations, because Daniel Warren Johnson has been around for a little while, but this is his big coming out party. This is amazing. This particular issue centers on Thea, the lead character, going to see, like, sort of a village elder. I should set the scene in this book that it's a sci-fi tribal, maybe future, maybe a different world entirely, story, and it really centers on one tribe and one family that has lost a lot. In the first issue, the lead character, who is an artist, and that's her identity and her place in the world, gets her hand cut off, and it's in the first few pages, so this isn't spoilers. The whole story really centers on this concept and her figuring out what her place in the world is now and what her place in her tribe is now. There's just so much heart in this book. It's so immersive. It's kinetic. I will say the one downside is that it's gruesome. It is gruesomely violent. I feel it is necessary for the story, but it can be off-putting, and obviously it limits the age potential for this. But yeah, Extremity is awesome. Extremity number 3 is what I hoped for.
Nice. Awesome. Patrick, how are you feeling over there?
Good. yeah, I've been meaning to pick that one up, actually. It sounds really, it sounds really interesting for sure. So, but the one I have is, instead of being towards the beginning of a run, this is actually unfortunately towards the end of its run, which is DC's The Flintstones. This is part of their Hanna-Barbera universe that they're kind of building up. Originally, they were planning on just doing 12-issue runs for all of their Hanna-Barbera stories. I believe Scooby Apocalypse, which is one that I'm a fan of, is going further than 12. But unfortunately, The Flintstones is ending at 12. This is issue number 11 that just came out. And for those of you not reading it, it is one of the sharpest social political satires in any medium right now. I'm a huge fan of politics and satire individually, and them coming together is, sometimes it's a little in your face, sometimes it's just so spot on, you kind of like want to go out and shake your fist at society in general. And the Flintstones run, every issue is pretty much a standalone, so there's not really spoilers to do. They all take on different social sort of ideas and talk about. This particular issue is a lot about gentrification, and we get this amazing allegory in the beginning. The first page, it's like six panels of Bam Bam goes out. There's two birds sitting in a tree. Bam Bam goes out, chops down the tree, the birds fly away, then Bam Bam builds a birdhouse out of the tree and puts it back up for the birds to come and live in. And they're kind of squished in. Yeah, it's just this amazing allegory. And so for the rest of the issue, we have these new people moving into the Flintstones and the Rubbles neighborhood. And they're kind of like these hipster guys. And they're like, oh, I just love the realistic quality of your neighborhood and how down to earth it is, man. But then at one point, Barney, for Fred's birthday, he builds him this statue of their friendship, which the new people in the neighborhood take offense to.
What?
And at one point, it's really funny. All the people come up and they're like, we can't have this statue up. It's Barney and Fred, and they're kind of hands over their shoulders. And one of the the people that come up and say, first of all, this has nothing to do with your lifestyle, and we just think it's an eyesore. So it's kind of like, it's kind of a joke, because they kind of look like they're a gay couple together, and the hipster, and the new hipsters in the neighborhood are like, we're totally cool with that, but we're not cool with how you live your lives, pretty much. So
don't put it in our face.
Yeah, and meanwhile, the great Gazoo, who is also a character in this,
he's amazing.
Amazing. He goes back to his world and brings back the Intergalactic Neighborhood Association, whose only job is pretty much either to blow up planets or give out gift baskets based on your performance in the stellar neighborhood. And so I don't really want to spoil how it ends, because the Earth isn't destroyed. There's still one more issue to go in this. So little spoiler there. But the way they do a judge, like a psyche judge on it, on one member of the species, and it turns out that their whole thing is they can't be too aggressive or too smart or too, like, out there. It's pretty much like keeping everything bland and white bread and in their control. Everything that goes outside of their expectations is bad.
Interesting.
So it kind of wraps these two stories of this Intergalactic Neighborhood Association and gentrification into just an amazing 25-page issue. And that's what happens with all the Flintstones. You're like, how are they going to tackle, you know, consumerism in one issue? Oh, and then you're like, oh, that's how they do it.
That's
so
awesome.
So I want to do a little bit of a shout out to Griffin Games and Comics, 1119 West Drake Road, Unit C30 in Fort Collins, Colorado. And really, specifically, one of the things I want to talk about is the fact that we have a reading group called Let's Talk Comics, and it'll be meeting on May 21st, it's a Sunday, at 2 o'clock. The topic of this group is actually, or for this month, is the Flintstones. Volume 1 has released, it's issues 1 through 6. Come and pick it up, enjoy, and then come and have a nice chat with a group of people about the Flintstones and the, you know, all the overtones that Patrick was just talking about. It's a wonderful comic.
And then
book.
More. I mean, just in the first, I just read the trade a couple days ago, and just in the first six issues, it tackles religion, consumerism, media, entertainment. I could go on. It's just so sharp and so on point. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, it's really sad then that it's ending then, because it seems like it's up there with, like, the Scooby-Doo apocalypse in terms of popularity.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll do something with it afterwards.
Hopefully.
I'm hoping that they continue the run, or that Mark Russell goes on to at least do something else similar to this, because he is just killing it, nail on the head.
That's awesome. All right, well, I will be reviewing Green Valley number 8. Now, I am happy to say that I've been reading Green Valley since issue number 1. I fell in love with it way back then, so the fact that it's up for Eisner just means I'm that good at choosing the right comics. Not surprised there. And so this issue is Image. This is perfect Image. Like, you know how CW has a formula, right? Image has a formula where at the end there's this huge shocker of every single issue. So in this issue does not in any way disappoint in terms of the shockers at the end.
Okay.
And what I love about it is that the characters that you have gotten to know so far, so, you know, one of them is dead currently. So we have Burt Wald, who's the main character. He's the main kind of knight from the very beginning, who's the strongest and the leader. Then you have Ralphus, who's like his best friend, kind of like number, you know, right-hand man. You have Gulliver, who's like lovable, kind of big guy, who touts himself as a dragon slayer, and even though they've never seen a dragon before. And then there's Indrid, who's basically like the ranger of the group, who can shoot an arrow from anywhere and hit any part of your body, and you're out. He's already dead. So he died a couple issues in. You'll have to find out what happened, though, because it was a really good death. Okay. So if you've been following Green Valley up to this point, it's basically, think about it as like Knights of the Round Table era, right? Middle, you know, kind of like big castles and knights who protect those castles. And you have this group of knights who basically have been protecting their castle for a very long time until it gets basically burned to the ground, all right? And you have to read to find out what happens there. Big twist all along the way. And then they're basically in the middle of nowhere, like without any hope and not knowing what to do. And this kid comes and says, hey, a wizard's taken over our village. We need your help because we know that you are the legendary knights of blah, blah, blah. And so they go help this kid, and it's not what you think. Everything just gets twisted very quickly because this magician is actually a time traveler, bad guy, who's just traveling throughout time, collecting artifacts, and trying to cause chaos. And so these knights are like, what? We don't understand time and time travel and whatever. And so this guy has brought back dinosaurs and other types of things. He has a gun. And so these like knights are like, well, we don't know how to beat that.
Right.
We're going to die.
It's a god.
It's a god. Anyways, one of the main characters finally kind of catches on. He gets thrown into the future a little bit by the time cops. They tell him what's really going on and then send him back. Well, what ends up happening is that this guy wants to use the guy's time machine to go back in time to save their castle. So if he can do that, that'll be great. But if you use the machine, apparently, one more time, time will completely fracture.
Oh.
Yeah. So he knows this. The other guys don't know it, but he knows this. And yet he still tries to use the time machine anyways, and something happens.
Oof.
So pick up Green Valley number 8 if you want to find out what happens.
Yeah, wow.
Actually, pick up from number 1. I'm sorry. Pick it up from number 1 and read it all the way through. Pick up a trade. Whatever you want to do. But get
just pick it up.
Just pick it up.
Awesome. Well, that's a convincing review. I like the creative team on that book a lot.
Yeah.
Max Landis and Giuseppe Comicoli. I really just like saying his name, so I had to
do that. Sounds like you said it perfectly. Rolled off your tongue.
Exactly. So my next book is actually Nick Fury number 1 by James Robinson, and I don't know if it's ACO or if it's ACO, like some sort of an acronym.
Mm.
This book sucks. I had heard really great things about this, and I've muscled through this. Like, this is not this wasn't for me. Maybe there is an audience out for this book.
Sure.
It felt like the panel layouts, everything felt like, let's try something crazy. But they never thought whether or not they really should try something crazy. It's like, you know, going overboard and doing something weird for the sake of doing
right.
It felt like a bad James Bond movie, like not something that was enjoyable.
So like maybe they did no focus group meetings, they just kind of focus groups, they just did it and like, all right,
well,
I'm sure people are gonna love this, they're gonna love it.
Well, I think they wanted to pay homage to the Steranko run where it was, you know, very psychedelic and it's difficult to follow. It wasn't easy to read. I don't think it was a good introduction. So there's a trend, and I don't know if maybe it's my background is leading me to see something that isn't there, or if it's truly there, but there's a trend of using computer graphics models, like 3D models, CG models in a computer, and rendering them out, and then maybe drawing over the top of them, or simply using that as the panel art for the characters. I don't like it. I think there's something that is lost in that. I think characters look too rigid. There isn't cartooning that gets done, so exaggeration doesn't happen. And I feel like in comics is one of the great places to exaggerate the human form and to really use kinetic action and to make things feel bigger and better than they actually are. And it's just, it's rigid, it's stiff. I know that's the same thing, but I can't get it out of my head. There's no energy. It feels lifeless.
Yeah.
And, just not a fan. I don't know. The one positive I do have is the pop art colors were really, really cool. Like, it was cool to see that level of design in there. It's just, it didn't serve any function. It was just there to have a look.
Hey, you know, we're not always going to review good stuff. Sometimes we got to tell you about the bad stuff, so that's our job.
Got to eat your vegetables.
Got to eat the vegetables. That's right, for you to like candy.
All right,
Patrick?
I think I want to do just 3 quick shout-outs here. There's not a whole lot to review. There's, I have sitting in front of me Miss Marvel, the Free Comic Book Day, I Hate Image, and then the New Superman, which I am just loving Ms. Marvel and New Superman, 2 of my favorite issues right now. Not a whole lot to talk about other than a couple quick shout-outs to both of them. So firstly, the New Superman, for those of you who don't know, is the Justice League of China. The Chinese government is pretty much trying to recreate the Justice League. For what purpose? We're not sure yet. Amazing run. I got into it because the writer, Gene Luen Yang, is an amazing comic book writer. He's won multiple Eisners already. American-born Chinese, a phenomenal book. Boxers and Saints, a dual book series, also an amazing book. So he's an amazing writer. But something aside from that is I noticed in this issue, and I don't know if it's been in issues before that or if they just recently changed up the team, but the writer, the penciler, the inks, and the colors are all done by Asian authors, or Asian artists, I should say. So Gene Luen Yang is the writer. On pencils, we have Billy Tan. Inks is Taco Zhang, and color is Ying Zhan.
Nice.
So that's awesome. So that's a really cool thing to see in comics that you don't really see that often. You know, you have guys writing books about girls, and you have white guys writing books about people of color, and all these things. So it's just amazing to see a team like that actually working on something that's so near and dear to their hearts, and it really comes out in the story. It's phenomenal. Moving on quickly to another thing, we have Miss Marvel, which one of my personal favorites. This issue is just like a heartstring puller. So it takes, for those of you familiar with the story, it takes place around Bruno Corelli's aftermath of the Civil War. So this is Kamala Khan's best friend growing up, who they end up on different sides of Civil War II, and he pretty much gets crippled because of
what
happens.
Wow.
It is. It's so sad, and he hasn't been in the last one or two arcs, I can't remember, because he transferred to Polytech Prep in the Golden City in Wakanda. To get pretty much as far away from Kamala as possible, because he just couldn't do it anymore. She's doing her superhero things, and he's like, you're just leaving your friends and family in the dust doing this. And so this issue actually is entirely around Bruno's experience in Wakanda. Miss Marvel doesn't even appear except in this daydream in the beginning. That's like three panels.
Oh, wow.
So it's really interesting to see this whole, like an entire comic in the run that's Miss Marvel take place around a side character.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's really interesting to do it because Bruno Corelli is this Italian guy from Jersey, and now he's in Wakanda, so he's the outsider now. You know, they call him Yankee Doodle.
Oh my gosh.
Because he is, like, doodling in class, and the kid is like, you're a Yankee, and you doodle, therefore Yankee Doodle. So there's just an amazing monologue of Bruno going through his head, talking about his recent, he lost the use of his left hand, which is his right arm, excuse me, which is his dominant arm. He's an applied scientist, so being able to do small technical details is a huge part of his life, which he's pretty much lost the ability to do. And there's one part when him and his roommate, they go on this, quote, adventure to steal some vibranium, and his roommate's just like, you know, if you keep... Bruno's like, I can't run, I can't pick up this stuff. And he's like, if you keep telling yourself it's true, then it'll eventually come true. And in the inner monologue, Bruno says, part of me gets screamingly angry when people say stuff like, mind over matter. Yeah, whatever, you don't wake up in my body every day. The other part of me desperately wants them to be right. And I feel like this is, I don't know, I just got chills when I read that line. It's this great... And Ms. Marvel's all about this paradox that we live in as people, trying to be the best and what we are currently, be the best versions of ourselves, and then stuck in this world that's actually happening. So it's just a heartstring tugger, this issue, especially if you've been following up with the story. And then to completely change gears, quick shout out to the Free Comic Book Day. I Hate Image. So this is an I Hate Fairyland sort of one-off where it's also pretty much Fairyland Kills the Image universe. So we're talking about people killing blank universes in the 1.0 issue. And so now we have the main character from Fairyland pretty much going through all of Image and killing all of the characters. And there's a couple panels in here that just... I went and ordered I Hate Fairyland Volume 1 after reading this just because there's some jokes in here that are spot on. Like, we have Rick here who's... that he has this speech bubble and he says, "Carl, if she moves, Carl, shoot her in the brain, Carl!" And Carl's over there like... saying, he likes saying my name. So that just got me. And then in another one, she meets up with the Paper Girls crew and she's just riding along and they're like, "I love the Goonies and Monster Squad and Family Ties and Pee Wee Playhouse and Tang." And she's like, "What the hell are they talking about?" And her little like Jiminy Cricket type guy is like, "They need to remind us that they're in the 80s constantly."
So great.
So just little one-off jokes like that lets me know that Scotty Young is just an amazing writer, and I'm sure I Hate Fairyland will be just as good once I start reading it. And even though it is, like, fairies and, like, you know, bright colors and stuff, it is not a young adult. It is not a young person. It's hardly, like, for our age. Like,
it's just incredibly violent.
Yeah, it's just so violent. Like, in the Walking Dead part, like, just all the parts. Yeah. Like, you have her, like, literally chopping people's brains out and, like, just annihilating people.
Here's the only thing I want to say about I Hate Image, is that it was kind of pushed on me as, like, you should read this, right? But what someone failed to say to me, really, is that you should read this if you read the mainstream Image comics. Because a lot of this, I don't even know. I don't even, like, I only know two of them.
Really?
Like two or three. Because I read so many off things. Like, there was no Green Valley in here, right? So there's a lot of Image that I read that it wasn't in here, represented. So I really felt lost as I was reading. I'm like, "Oh, I'm not attached, or this isn't funny to me, because I don't, I get some of it no matter what, right? Like, oh, Goonies and blah, blah, blah." I get it, generally, but since I never read that, and I made the assumption that this is from Bitch Planet.
Yes.
So only because they said that. Otherwise, I would have never known that. And so there's a lot of things in here that's the only thing I didn't like. But, of course, I know about Saga, because who doesn't? If you don't know about Saga, you don't even exist in this world. You shouldn't even be listening to this podcast. Yeah.
I don't read Saga.
But you know of Saga.
I know of Saga.
You gotta at least know of it.
Yeah.
So I guess I should only partially exist.
Sure, Spawn, why not? But anyways, overall, I think you should be aware that if you're going to read this, you should be reading some of the... you're only going to really get it if you know the main titles of Image.
I definitely think that's, you know, it's referencing and joking and playing, you know, poking fun at the mainstream Image books. Mm-hmm.
That is true. But just to reiterate, this is just a one-off.
Right, yeah, of course.
It's a free comic book day comic. I'm not sure, because like I said, I haven't started actually reading this story yet, so I don't know if it's going to tie in at all.
No,
I don't think it will.
It doesn't. Yeah. I hate Fairyland is... it's a maniacal joy. It's a messed up, fun book, the premise. Scotty Young is just... fantastic, but the main title doesn't really represent anything else.
Right, and I'm just probably too picky. I can't help myself, so you know that's just what
I
thought.
It was free.
I know.
I hate free things.
I hate it. Gosh.
Oh my gosh! I want my money back.
Yeah, right. That's how I feel. I want my money back. So I'll do quickly a few, and I'm just going to say, you know, I'll do my classic Leander hate it, love it situation. Champions, love it. It's a great book. Read it, pick it up. Number 8's good. It's after the fallout of some stuff that happened with a corporation taking their logo, and they're trying to figure out what to do with that. All the characters come into their own. Miss Marvel, a little whiny, I'm not going to say, throughout this entire book, a little too whiny for me. But otherwise, she was fine. One of them, Viv, who I love the Visions, first of all. Oh my gosh, the Visions, the book was amazing. And so to have Viv in this book was important for me to pick it up for her. And something happens in this book which talks about her sexuality. Figure it out for yourself. Pick it up and read it. Catalyst, I got from Free Comic Book Day. Amazing. I'm putting it in my bin because it's that good.
Nice.
So go pick it up. It is from Lion Forge. And I love it because it's basically this concept that there's a huge meteor coming to destroy the world. Only one woman knew about it. She's trying to figure it out. And so she sends some scientists out there to blow up this meteor. And you find at the very end that that meteor was never going to hit Earth. She made up the whole thing so that she can be super popular and rich and have all the money. However, there was a true meteor or something, because all the scientists now kind of set up are going to somehow make it back to Earth and all have powers. And we don't know what's going on.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. Wow. So I think it's going to be great. It's going to be a really good book. Great setup. Scooby-Doo Apocalypse, number 13. Scooby-Doo, going strong. Didn't expect it.
Didn't expect it either. I was a huge Scooby-Doo fan just for the nostalgia's sake. Yeah. So seeing this, you know, taken, you know, they're just taking these old, these childhood fan, like, greats from all of ours and just making them twice as gritty, or like 20 times as gritty, right. Pretty much.
Right. And I think they did a really good job of maximizing and going beyond the base character of each of the characters that are in Scooby-Doo. Fred, Velma, Daphne, Scooby, and Shaggy. And I really like the way that they brought those characters into their own, made unique references to each of them. So Fred is like definitely the big bulky guy, but he's probably the more sensitive one as well. He's definitely that whole Daphne, Freddy situation, but yet Daphne has yet to kind of return the affection.
Okay.
So Fred's still trying to deal with that situation. Daphne is the leader, period. You don't even question the fact that Daphne's a leader. You don't even, that's not even something you better question, because you would get punched in the face.
That's awesome.
And that's what Daphne wants. She will punch you in the face if you question her. And I love her. She's such a good character. I'm glad she is not this princy princess person. She is.
She's the tank. She's the heavy hitter.
She's the heavy hitter. She has the biggest gun. She has everything.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And, so Shaggy too, he's not just, like, this stoner bro anymore. He's kind of, like, this hipster kind of guy.
With attitude, too.
But he's, like, a well-rounded hipster, pretty much.
He's a good character.
And even Scooby is a well-rounded dog.
So this is, like, one of the best dog characteristics of Scooby in a very long time. It allows him to be afraid. Yet at the same time, he knows that he is the protector of this group. Mm-hmm. You do not touch this group unless you go through Scooby first.
Yeah. And then speaking of rounding out characters, Velma is probably the most well-rounded character that we see. She's not just like the nerdy, like, I lost my glasses kind of person. She is like a PhD, a multiple PhD scientist.
Yes.
And in this issue, too, we get to see her brother, or one of her brothers. She has four brothers.
First, let me ask you really quick. Do you feel this brother represents in any way Donald Trump? His look, his face, the way he acts, what he says. Very much Donald Trumpish.
I didn't even think about that, but there is like a particular panel I'm thinking of now that he has like the toupee.
Yeah.
And he has like, and like his face, and like
facial
there's like a side view of him at one point that I'm thinking of where it's just like so incredibly, and he's like a real estate mogul
who's all about money and power.
He's an egotist who doesn't really care about anybody else. He has like this trophy wife. And I think she says it's his third wife too at some point. He lives in a giant tower that has his name on it.
Yep.
Wow.
Now that you say it, it's totally, totally, it's like,
totally
yeah, look at that. Yeah, just
it's,
like
it's
this
all
sign.
There. It's and, all there.
Yeah. That's totally him. And that is just amazing. But so, yeah, we get a, apparently Velma is related to Donald Trump's allegory. So,
yeah, but it's dark. It's really good. Only thing throwing me off right now about Scooby Apocalypse is Scrappy. But Scrappy's always throwing me off. So at the end of the book, there's a mini series about Scrappy and what he's doing in the world while this is going on. But Scrappy is not Scrappy, like the one that you know, obviously. Scrappy is like this hulking monster for some reason. And what's really good, is that Scrappy has a pet, and the pet is a human. And he is, like, vicious. Scrappy is straight up vicious. And at certain points, you're pretty sure he's going to kill that kid. And then somehow he stops himself from killing the kid because he feels some kind of connection to him.
It kind of reminds me of, Did you guys ever see Boardwalk Empire by any chance? So there's this amazing show. There's this one character in it who's kind of like, he's this Italian mobster. He's like the head of, and I forget his name because he's a famous actor too, but he's like, he's just the classic character that is like, he's like laughing at your face, and that could end with him like giving you a cigar or him cutting your head off.
Right.
Like in the most vicious way possible. Gotcha. And that's like,
that's Scrappy.
And that's what Scrappy is. Like you, he's like this giant hulking werewolf type monster, and he could like give his human like some food to eat, or he could like just
eat his human.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, it's he's really like a sociopath.
Yeah, he's
like,
totally sociopath, and he hates Scooby-Doo.
Yeah,
with a passion.
I really feel like I missed the boat on this comic. I should have hit it early, but
pick up the trade.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick up the trade.
Go for the trade.
This sounds amazing.
I enjoy it every single time.
It started off. I started off with issue one, and it like hits off hard and just keeps getting better.
I can tell you from a retail perspective, it is so popular. It's impossible to find issue one. I've tried to find like second, third.
Really?
People can't find them.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah, it's really good. And Velma is in a way actually like somewhat of the reason that the world is an apocalypse now. So she has to like deal with that. It's like a lot of guilt that she's dealing with, and her and Daphne kind of hate each other pretty much for the first. All the issues so far.
Right. Gotcha. So that's it. I'll just quickly say X-Men Gold, not feeling it. I'm dropping it out of my bin. Sorry. Didn't make it X-Men Gold. X-Men Blue is barely doing it for me, but we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah.
X-O Manowar from Free Comic Book Day. Pick it up. Read it. It's amazing. All it needs is literally three pages, and I'm hooked for my life.
That's like, awesome.
This is so, and I know nothing about X-O Manowar. Awesome. These first four pages in here are going to, like, draw you into his entire universe, and it doesn't take much. So whoever is writing this, I don't know who the person is that's writing it, and
beef.
How important that
beef.
Person is.
Got beef with that. I read that same thing, and I thought it was like one of the most stereotypical like human on an alien world kind of thing.
Really,
it was just like too like. It was just really stereotypical in a lot of ways. I don't know.
I think he's sequestered himself on this world, that some other things have happened in his past. But I haven't been reading X-O Manowar, or the first issue of this new run that's starting, and I loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, I might be a sucker for that kind of storytelling, too. Just like the high
maybe that's what it is, too.
Sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a sci-fi fantasy person. I don't like people on other planets. I don't do stars stuff. So I was surprised I liked it as much as I did.
Conan
well, because it's very Western-esque, too. Like, it starts off...
And the art is fantastic. I love the art.
Kind of like the old desperado who's, like, trying to sort of, like, get his, like, make up for something he's done in the past before, which... I don't know. I get it. Space Westerns, they're all the rage now.
They've
been the rage since, you know, Cowboy Bebop. But,
yeah.
You know, that's... And I love me a good space western. Don't get me wrong. Firefly, amazing show. You know, all those.
So maybe that's what it is. I don't watch any of that sort of stuff that you just talked about. So maybe for me, this is like brand new stuff that I've never seen before.
Okay.
This idea of, like you said, western sci-fi.
Yeah.
I haven't really been into anything before that was like that. So maybe that's why this is the first
one. Maybe this one just particularly hit a nerve.
Yeah.
I love it. I think the art's really great, too.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I love... See, I love the ideas of space westerns.
Okay.
Just because there's such two genres that you never thought would go together that go together so perfectly when they're done right.
Yeah.
And that... I don't know. I didn't see anything... knew about it. So I guess if you've never read or seen a space western before, pick up X-O Manowar. If you're a big fan of the genre, give it a try. It's still a free Comic Book Day comic.
All right, that's it. I did my thing.
All right, well, I will continue with some of the Free Comic Book Day. I actually have one Free Comic Day book to talk about. Kid Savage out of Image Comics. This is an all-ages book. Skews a little older in my opinion, but... yeah, this was a surprise for me. I had no idea what this was. It's written by Joe Kelly with art by, I think it's Ilya. I actually don't know. It's just a single name. But this is from Man of Action, which is a group that does, like, cartoons, Nickelodeon cartoons.
Hmm.
They're responsible for Ben 10, which was Cartoon Network.
Oh, wow. I love that show.
But yeah, this book was a surprise. It was like a beautiful, fast-paced adventure. There's very little dialogue in the first part of the story, so you have to be a competent storyteller to do that, to be able to actually tell a story and have the audience follow along with it. So I was real pleasantly surprised. I went and I grabbed the trade for the shop because I want to continue reading more of this. I think it's only one volume at this point. I don't know if that will be continuing, but yeah, it's there's a lot of puzzles in this that need to be solved. And yeah, the one negative I would have, and it's, yeah, calling out negatives on for you books seems so irrelevant, but it can sort of feel like amateurish and unfinished. Like, it's uneven in terms of the art style between from beginning to end. There's certain panels are just outstanding, and others just meh.
Sure.
So what's it actually about, though?
It's a kid who is in what seems to be some sort of, like, prehistoric world. I don't know if it's post-apocalyptic or a different planet, but he's, like, living off of the land and just sort of a normal adventure, just kid set in the middle of his universe. And then, like, space people arrive and sort of the nick of time, and they're human. So I don't know if he's from another world, if they're on another world, or if they're maybe in the future. So, yeah, there's definitely an interesting family dynamic that comes of it. I recommend this. This was really interesting.
Okay, nice.
So the next book I have, though, is X-Men Blue number 3.
I read that, too.
I have a feeling we're going to have different opinions on this one. I have been totally loving X-Men Blue. This is what I'm looking for out of an X-Men book. It's written by Colin Bunn, art by Jorge Molina. This is just, I don't know, it's a great team book. It's they feel like teenagers, which is awesome. The art actually displays the fact that they're young. I hate when somebody who's supposed to be 14 looks like they're 30.
Right.
Playing dress up as a kid, and you don't get that here. It's not like watching, '90s high school movies. this is definitely, it's energetic, it's fun, it's adventure-y, it's splashy. I think it's a really good portrayal of Jean as the leader. This particular issue number 3, I think there's a lot that happens talking telepathically, and she feels like a leader. She feels like she's in control, and she's questioning the motivations of the villain in this particular issue, and the motivations of their team benefactor, Magneto, which I'd like that a lot. I feel like I'm more invested in this Jean Grey than I was in the previous incarnations. And it might just be that I haven't read X-Men in a long time, but this was this is awesome.
Yeah, so my thing is, I like the concepts. I really like the return of the villain, the main villain. I thought he was gone for good, so right. I was actually surprised they even brought him back, because they could have brought anyone back, and the fact they chose him was very interesting. And that these kids had not fought that guy before. So these kids have not fought that particular villain before, yet some of them knew because they read the history books of the X-Men like they were supposed to.
Yep.
Some didn't. And I really love the use of Sentinels and the concept of mutants and Sentinels. And you'll have to read it for yourself to understand that relationship. What I don't like, I think, so this is a good, there's a panel here that I think hits it for me. I don't like their facial expressions. I think their facial expressions are weak, and they're not very strong, and I don't really feel empathy for them. It doesn't, like, something about their faces look like Cabbage Patch Kids, and it doesn't do it for me. But, you know, to each their own, right?
I'm looking at the same panel, and it's a bottom, just like a full character roster. And yeah, I would say this is a weak panel. I think Jorge Molina's trying to cartoon, and that doesn't lend to his style.
Right.
Facial expressions, especially like in that way to really communicate to the audience exactly the emotion, isn't always easy. And then we have six characters that you're attempting to have
in one panel,
right, have the same reaction. So that may have been,
that may be what it is. But if you look at before, when they show the X-Men from before fighting Sentinels, that panel looks gorgeous. I love everything about that panel, but I feel the rest of the book looks nothing like that to me.
That's really interesting.
It doesn't look the same. It doesn't feel the same. Something about the way they captured that panel in art doesn't look the same to me in the other pages. But overall, I was never a big, like, bring the old X-Men back. So I never even want anything they've been in so far. I've avoided completely. Okay. So I have some negative bias there, I think, against these kids. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm really digging the characterization. I one of the things I thought was weak in this issue was they didn't spend a lot of time with Beast exploring the mystic arts. Right. And as a subplot, that's something I'm finding really, really interesting. There's weird, you know, juxtaposition of the science Beast might be a little bit far gone, so now we have a Beast that's studying a new form of science, and I like that idea.
Yeah, they have the right story, they have the right villains. I think this is the wrong X-Men for me.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
Fair enough. I'll be interested in seeing the change in artists, because it's a bi-weekly series, they can't keep the same artist as consistent as you could on a monthly book, so.
Yeah. Alright. Patrick?
Yeah. So, I've been reading the current run of Jessica Jones that they're doing. And by they, I mean Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Gaidos. Not sure about that last name. Sorry, Michael Gaidos. So it is just it's all around great. I'm usually not a big detective story kind of person, but for some reason Jessica Jones just really does it for me. Like, the Netflix show, so solid. Just unbelievably
amazing.
Solid.
Amazing.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. In every conceivable way. And same with the current run that's happening. It's a lot of classic Jessica Jones, like, real street-level kind of crime. She's trying to... It starts off... this is number 8. So it starts off, and she's kind of trying to figure out some stuff that happens after Secret Wars. Like, to just regular people on the ground, how, like, normal people deal with the fact that universes are colliding.
Huh.
And, this particular issue, too, the art style is amazing. It's just incredibly, I don't want to say, like, impressionistic, but, what would you say this, like, style is, Matt?
Boring.
Fair enough.
It's not my type of art style. It's very, it is realistic rendering with a heavy ink line, and it's competent storytelling, just not for me, so I'll let Patrick keep talking there.
Fair enough. Sorry I even asked.
Sorry, gosh.
So the reason I picked out this particular issue, to bring into the discussion is the way it gets us into Jessica Jones' headspace is just phenomenal. And it opens up the very first page. It starts out, so here's how my brain works. And then she has this Maria Hill. She walks into her bathroom, and Maria Hill is bleeding all over her tub with what seems to be a bullet wound. And the first thing that Jessica Jones, she has this big, long monologue where she's talking about Maria Hill, who's a professional spy who led S.H.I.E.L.D., whose pretty much entire life is revolving around lies, telling lies, and manipulating people through lies and setting up people. And so Jessica Jones is not buying anything that Maria Hill says. She says at one point towards the bottom of page 1, I don't even believe that's her blood. She probably did it to herself. So she's not even buying the fact, and we see Maria Hill holding a bullet, like, and her hands are all bloodied, and she has a Band-Aid on her side. Gosh, and Jessica Jones is not buying any of this because her detective mind is already, like, 10 steps ahead, working out what is her motivation, why is she here. She could have started bleeding out on anybody's bathroom floor.
Right.
Why pick mine? And so Maria Hill has this big, long sort of, why did I get here and what's happening? And Jessica doesn't almost say anything for this whole time. And there's this amazing, like, 2-panel layout. I just want to show that to you guys, where they're sitting in her office, and Jessica Jones is pretty much just staring at her. Her face doesn't change for 6 panels at the top, and Maria Hill is down there gesturing and with all these facial expressions. She has this big long story about getting fired from S.H.I.E.L.D. and like what's happening and what's running, like what's chasing her, why'd she get shot, like what she thinks is gonna happen. And because it was set up like it was, I'm sitting here like, I don't believe it. Maria Hill, I'm right there with Jessica. Yeah. Jessica's just looking at her. Her face doesn't change for this whole.
Oh, that's great.
So to kick back on the art, because I may have spoken too soon, this particular two-page spread is really a great storytelling piece. Mm. And you just, without even reading it, you can tell that there's an uneasy tenseness in the sequence that... Yeah, and Jessica's face is great.
Yeah, Jessica's face is not having it at all. And Maria Hill, you can tell she's telling this story, and the more she gets into it, the more it feels like she's trying to force Jessica to get into it. Yeah, and yeah, so, as a reader, since it was set up, mm-hmm. like, so with this paranoia that Jessica Jones is really famous for... All of a sudden, I'm sitting here like, I don't even believe a thing you're saying, Maria Hill. I don't even know. Did you shoot? Even though in the previous issues, we actually see that she does get shot by someone else and we're trying to figure out what. I'm sitting there like, was that even, like, did she hire somebody to shoot her and then she's doing this? That's so, like,
awesome. That's fantastic.
Brian Michael Bendis, obviously one of Marvel's, like, heavy hitters when it comes to writing, and he... Like, as a character study for Jessica Jones, I think this current run is really hitting the nail on the head.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Is it a play out like procedurals, or is it like more of an overarching story?
So it actually does get a lot into the specifics of detective work. Okay. So like, going a couple pages later, Maria Hill's like, and so long story short, I want to hire you as a detective. And then, you know, Jessica Jones is like, all right, but you're paying me up front. We're signing the contract right now. And then she says like this, and she's like, you're going to pay me up front, and I'm charging you a trying to arrest my husband tax.
Oh,
so
no.
There's like very, snap. Yeah, so it's like, oh, snap.
That's great.
So it does get into the specifics. She's going into like, she's actually like doing detective work, okay, cool. And like it's really street level.
Hmm.
She's just trying to figure out sort of, you know, classic Jessica Jones. She's getting wrapped up in all these mysteries she really doesn't care about, except for the fact that it's by people who have lots of money that can give it to her.
Nice.
All right. I'm feeling it. I may have to pick it up, because I'm really into Jessica Jones, so...
Yeah, I think I need to take that in trade.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I might do a trade. Yep.
I think it actually might be a little better in trade, especially for the first volume, because it's a little bit of... It's a little slow, just because it is, like, really... Yeah, it's Bendis, and
sure.
It's grinding detective work, pretty much. There's only a little bit of action, really, in each issue.
Well, sometimes you gotta take time to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, I will do a quick review then with Patrick of Black Panther and the Crew, number 2. So this is the book I didn't know I wanted. That's definitely what I think this is. I didn't know I was going to want it so badly. I thought I was going to read it. I'm like, all right, I'm going to read it because Ta-Nehisi, I'm all about it. And all right, let's see what's going on. And, this book makes no sense because it's so amazing. So it really starts off with, and I love the two characters that it's starting off with. It's starting off with Misty Knight and Storm.
Okay.
Worlds apart in power levels. Yeah. Not even in the same universe for power levels. But Misty Knight definitely holds her own. And I love the way that basically Misty and Storm are walking through Harlem. Because they're trying to figure out a mystery, or they're trying to solve some kind of... Something's going on, and we're trying to figure out what's going on. And the fact that they're walking through Harlem, it feels like they're in Harlem. You can feel Harlem as you read it. It feels very street. It definitely goes back and has like a... and you know, there's this flashback to this guy, Ezra, is that his name?
Yeah, Ezra. I forget his last name.
I forget his last name, too. But basically, Ezra is working on... are they in Wakanda at the time? Are they in Africa?
No, they're actually... And I love this flashback, because it's Ezra whose death... He was murdered by someone for some reason, and Misty and Storm are trying to figure this out. And it starts off with this flashback, because he's like a civil rights activist, pretty much. And so they're in... I want to say it's... it says here, they're in Indonesia, actually, for the Asian-African Conference. And it has a lot of... There's this great moment when Ezra figures out what he wants to take back to Harlem. And it's like this sentiment that Misty and Storm are feeling, that you travel halfway across the world, and that's when you realize what's so important about where you come from and your roots.
Yeah.
And yeah, he has a moment where he figures out like what's so important about Harlem and
what he wants to bring back.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and it references Black Panther and the original Avengers and stuff like
that's awesome.
And heroes from that time. And so what it's really cool because Misty and Storm deal with, like, gang violence. And, of course, Storm's like, I'm not having it. I ain't got time for that.
Right.
So she just deals with that really quick. And then what I love the most is it talks about Storm back when the X-Men had to act like they were dead.
Okay.
Right? And during that time frame, they lived in Australia, I believe, or Gateway kind of teleported them away to different places back in those days. And so everyone assumed the X-Men were dead. But they were so cooped up in this one location that sometimes they had to get away. And so Gateway will let X-Men, like, all right, you can go here, live your life that way. So Storm chose to go live in Harlem, as well as living with among the X-Men. And apparently Storm's dad is from Harlem. That's what I kind of got from this, that her dad is from Harlem.
Or she has some family.
Some family, which was actually a little interesting, because I'm not sure how they're going to connect that, because I didn't know that about Storm. That she had a little bit of roots in Harlem already from family. Mm-hmm. And so you basically, I think, besides introducing that aspect, which is a really cool, like, let's go to the past and talk about a different way of what could have happened back then that you didn't know about, what I really like is when Misty and Storm are in Misty's apartment in Harlem. It's this really awesome, like, where Misty says, you know, you don't understand what it means. Like, yeah, I get it. I'm black. I'm a black woman. I'm used to, like, being discriminated against. And so Storm's like, yeah, well, imagine if you're a black woman and a mutant. And Misty's like, I ain't got time for that intersectionality of your black culture and being a mutant. I ain't got time for that. This is not the place. This is Harlem. And Storm's like, yeah, exactly. It's Harlem. This is the place we should be talking about that sort of stuff. I'm like, mind-blowing my mind right now. I'm not ready.
Yeah, it's so great. And I just want to have a shout-out to... This is, like, the Storm that I've always been looking for in, like, X-Men stuff. Firstly, her head wrap, the fact that she's just wearing a... She has, like, a head wrap and these, like, earrings, and it's just so... traditionally African, like she, I feel
she's
like
confident in it,
and she is confident,
so confident
too.
In it.
The that's another thing I wanted to shout out, because she's talking about how her old nickname is Blue. And she's like saying, like, oh, the guy Ezra actually like kept calling her Blue, and it kind of stuck in Harlem. And so she's like, at first I thought it was blue for my eyes, but he said, no, it's blue for your beautiful blue black skin. And that's like something, and it's like totally shirking like traditional white standards of beauty, because like I feel like X-Men is kind of all about that, even though it's supposed to be a pretty diverse book.
Right.
It sort of like drops off people's actual roots and stuff. And here we see Aurora as this, as an African deity, pretty much. And she looks the part. She carries herself like the part.
She does carry herself very well in this book, the entire way. You know?
She doesn't wear her normal Storm getup. Like I said, her hair is all wrapped up in this head wrap, so you don't get to see her, like, this white hair that she normally has, which, you know, going back to that whole, like, white standard of beauty type thing, she is definitely an African woman.
And even in the short panel where she does let it down, she's just gorgeous. She is just... Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's mohawked?
She saved. So actually, this happened, because her and Wolverine had a thing.
Okay.
And Wolverine cut her hair.
Really?
Yeah, like actually shaved her in the shower while they were doing some stuff.
My jaw is on the floor looking at this book. It's pretty beautiful,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they make being black beautiful in this book.
I need to check this out.
Totally worth it.
This is issue two?
Two.
Yeah, this is two. All right,
so get on the ground floor, apparently.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Jump in it. And just all I'm going to say is Black Panther's here now in Harlem. That's all I'm going to say.
That's sweet. That's
and then I just wanted to do one other quick shout out. I forgot to mention it while we were talking about, like, the flashback.
Yeah.
There's like one part in one of the panels on the second page where one of the guys mentions, he's like, I know Ezra, I see all these beautiful brown faces here uniting the good fight, and back home we're shivering in them ghettos. And that is like such a great like pre-civil rights like idea, like people coming back from World War II where they had the segregated units and all these people are like, we're fighting for the liberation of the world, but we can't even get liberated their own home. And then I feel like even though this is like in, what does it say, it's 1955 that this flashback takes place in,
right,
I feel like that is amazingly parallel to a lot of stuff that's happening here today in 2017, especially that's going on in like social justice.
What'll end up happening is that, so Black Panther is a really good book, World of Wakanda was a really good book. Black Panther and the crew, Ta-Nehisi is going to blow it out of the water. This is his life. This is him.
Yeah.
This is him. As I read this, I went, yes, this is your book. Got it. This is what the book you've been meaning to write.
Mm-hmm.
Black Panther, you're doing okay. Don't get me wrong. But Black Panther and the crew, you're going to literally crush it.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
I think I totally agree with you. It's like Black Panther was the book. He definitely wanted to write that, and he did an amazing job with it. But this is the book that, like, Marvel wouldn't have let him do this just off the bat without having, like, proven himself with the regular Black Panther run. And now he's like, all right, this is totally his vein of writing. Mm-hmm. This is exactly what he lives and breathes and, like, you know.
This is what they hired him
bleeds for.
They basically hired him for this book.
Yeah.
I'm thinking I'm going to be running to the shelf right now. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh man, it's
we can talk forever. We should stop at it. We could probably we could probably end it on the Black Panther.
Yeah, that was I think that's a fitting end.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for listening to issue 1.5 of Capes and Scales West. Look forward to hearing more on issue number 2 coming up soon as well, and we'll get that out to you guys as soon as we can. Have a great day.
Peace. Bye.